Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject of life today. Thank you all for joining us. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we warmly welcome you all. Start today with our prayer.
I'm reading from page 9 and 10, excerpts from there, and then miscellaneous writing, 388, line 10. Life in matter is a dream. Sin, sickness, and death are this dream. Life is spirit, and when we waken from the dream of life in matter, we shall learn the grand truth of being. St. John saw the vision of life in matter, and he saw it pass away, an illusion. Let us remember that God good is omnipotent. Therefore, evil is impotent. There is but one side to good. It has no evil side. There is but one side to reality, and that is good side. God is all and in all. That finishes the question of a good and a bad side to existence. Truth is the real. Error is the unreal. For love alone is life. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. Aaron, our watch.
Watch number 295. Watch lest you mistake a growing indifference to and lessening interest in material things and world events for an evidence of spiritual growth. This is God's universe, even though it appears to be distorted into matter when viewed through material sense. Spiritual growth shows itself in an increasing alertness and activity, a keen interest in everything good. Mrs. Eddy's growth was evident in her tremendous activity of thought, her careful and watchful attention to details, even at an advanced age. She never lost her interest in life. She was interested in current events and world affairs up to the end of her human span. She never relaxed in her determination not to permit one error to escape detection or to go unrebuked. The reflection of divine mind is strength, not weakness, activity, not passivity, keenness, not dullness, a love for humanity that is so alive and energetic that it prompts man to make every right effort to continue living on earth as long as possible in order to help poor humanity and ignorant sufferers to find the way to freedom. This is God's universe, and if we are daily reflecting Him, we will not lose interest in it, nor will we rest until we have completely spiritualized our conception of all things.
Thank you very much. Comments on.
I think it's the selflessness again of this whole, the cause of Christian Science. It's when you're not thinking about yourself, but thinking about living to bless humanity. I love the mention of reflection, I think twice in here. It's not so much losing interest in what's going on, but more interested in glorifying God with being His expression, His reflection. And we do that by getting more quick in rebuking the error and affirming the truth. I love the testimony that we'll call it advanced age lady gaze, where she said immediately as she fell, she immediately knew that, no, I'm all coated up in the love of God. I like that very much, because that's really showing that even at whatever they will call it, an older age, she's able to be what God says we are. And that to me is really growing spiritually.
Also, I think with you, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Please.
She was dealing with the whole situation with yellow journalism and a lot of smearing and attacks on her, and that was what prompted her to start the Christian Science Monitor. And I know maybe that was the idea behind it. I don't know where how that is playing out at the moment, but the idea was that we were to be in the world, not to separate ourselves, not to be monks or ascetics and just depart and not be involved. But most of what she did in her time and with her workers was to be involved in metaphysically dealing with a lot of the situations that were going on in the world then. So that's kind of what the watches are doing, what we're doing now. So we're just continuing that, and I think that's what that watching point is addressing.
Thank you, Michael. And I believe she started at the monitor. She started in her 80th year. So she did a lot of work, so-called senior years. She never let down. She never slowed up, as this watching point says, because of, and as Florence brought out, her love for God and mankind. There's no end to the work we have. And if we're seeing the world correctly, see through God's eyes, it's a beautiful world and ever interesting and ever revealing itself to us in beauty, grandeur, order.
Yeah, and I think the whole point, the watching point is warning us that if we're starting to lose interest in the world in which we live, it's not a sign of spiritual growth. It's a sign that you're being put to sleep and mesmerized. That if you're really growing spiritually, you will be more interested in the world around you, and you will be better able to deal with the things that need to be dealt with.
Yeah, well, divine love is not apathetic, so we as divine love's reflection can't be apathetic either.
True. Thank you.
What it does is it pushes us away from the belief of numbness and to being completely full of humility, which is really very much a part of our spiritual sense and understanding.
Thank you.
And to be aware of what needs to be handled also. That's what we're here for.
Be aware of what needs to be handled? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yes, Plainfield really taught me that, because somehow I thought there was some nobility in getting rid of your television, and then I just never replaced it with anything to tell me actually what was going on. So I would get the word from my family for this and that, but I didn't know what source to look to, but I prayed about it, and I found a source for news that I trust now, and I'm so grateful to be now paying attention to the world events. And just like what I think Carol just said, knowing what needs to be handled and getting off your lazy throne and handling it.
There's a word for that.
There's also a sense of self-absorption, too. A lot of things have been mentioned, but it's all about, and that's what was happening to me before coming here, is self. There was a lot of just self-absorption. And when we get to that point, it's very, no wonder I felt an emptiness. I wasn't really, you know, looking out at the world. It was more about myself. And so I'm much happier working for the world, the watches, and just doing what I'm doing now. I'm so much happier because my thought has expanded so much, and thinking of others, and it's just changed so much by coming here and learning how to think more globally, you know, more, not just about myself, but others.
Thank you very much. So that's been my definition of hell, is when all you have to do is think about yourself. Deadly.
Yeah.
And there's, yeah. There's that lie also that, you know, the older you get, the more you only think about yourself and your wrinkles and this and this and that. And yet this whole thing is for us to do, you know, to glorify God. And so if I wake up thinking, okay, what can I do today to bless someone? Or maybe your example can be, as you said here, the sermon to someone else. So it's not so much about yourself, it's about, of course, the whole of humanity, what Jesus' example was and Mrs. Eddy's example was also.
Thank you very much. And that, you know, I love Mrs. Eddy's short article on age that we have posted. And she starts with, the added wisdom of age and experience is strength, not weakness. And we should understand this, expect it, and know that it is so, and then it would appear. So we should only be getting better,
wiser,
holier, stronger in every way. And this lesson certainly brings that out. And in Science and Health, those pages 244 to 248, they're really invaluable, where Mrs. Eddy speaks on this in her chapter, Footsteps of Truth. We will get into that later. So thank you. Yes, and you know, try to stay away. People, are all they want to do is talk about themselves and all their ills, unless talked about, unless you're ready to correct that or change that conversation. It's not good to have to listen to that. And that, growing old, that can happen when whatever so-called age you are. As Karen was saying, it can be self-absorbed. You don't have to be necessarily old in order to be self-absorbed. Many people, all they do is think about themselves. And that's not the road to everlasting life. So, all right. Jeremy, would you read the golden text?
Psalms. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid?
Thank you. That is something I, most mornings, I start my day off with that. Powerful. Psalms are so powerful. Good things to work with. I did want to, I just remembered, before I get into more of the lesson, there was something I was running out of time last week. There's something I wanted to bring up. This has been on the news, noteworthy news. It was something that Linda from Nevada sent to me from the Mary Baker Eddy Library, and I just thought it was so fascinating. And it's called From the Papers of Leo Tolstoy and Mary Baker Eddy. And in this article, it brings out that Tolstoy, who was a famous Russian novelist and philosopher, and Mary Baker Eddy, they were contemporaries, and that they both thought very much of each other's works. And maybe some of you have read it, but this article, but it says that Tolstoy, of all the Gospels, the Sermon on the Mount was the portion that impressed me most, and I studied it more often than any other part. Nowhere else does Christ speak with such solemnity. Nowhere else does he give us so many clear and intelligible moral precepts, which commend themselves to everyone. If there are any clear and definite precepts of Christianity, they must have been expressed in this sermon. And therefore, in those three chapters of St. Matthew's Gospel, I sought the solution of my doubt. Tolstoy. So, it is beautiful. And Martha and I were just remarking how wonderful, you know, God speaks to everyone all over the world, and they get these divine ideas. And I was reading, or actually listening to, a review of his book. He wrote War and Peace, and this person said it was the best novel ever written. And it goes deep into many thoughts, philosophical thoughts. And it says in this article that Mrs. Eddy had some of his books in which she had taken notes and underlined, and highly of him. So,
She did send him science and health, I think.
Yes, I'm going to get to that. Her personal contained copies of the Grocer's Sonnet and Work While We Have Light. And we've also now, we've ordered another book that he wrote called The Kingdom of God is Within You. So, and yes, she found out, it said, in the summer of 1900, when she was living in Concord, New Hampshire, Mrs. Eddy heard that Tolstoy was ill. She wrote to her student, Anna White Baker, asking her that she send him two copies of her book, Science and Health of Key to the Scriptures. Please help me to send my Science and Health to the dear old martyr in this century, of this century, Count Tolstoy. I want him to have God's staff to lean upon. Whenever the enemy presses hard, I smile with the venerable count. They tell me he is ill. I must get my book to him. So she said that Baker sent a message in 1901 along with Signs and Health to the Tolstoy family estate. And in it she writes, the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy commissioned me to send to you her book, Signs and Health with the Key to the Scripture, which has established here in this country and abroad a practical religion that sees the need of the science of the truth with Jesus of Nazareth aimed to teach and preach, and which is doing a grand and noble work today. It says that Tolstoy probably was one of the first people in Russia to have read Science and Health. And a month later, his eldest son sent a letter of acknowledgement and thanks to Mrs. Eddy on his father's behalf. And then 2 months later, Mrs. Eddy also sent him miscellaneous writing. So, and pointed out a beautiful testimonial that explained how someone became interested in science and health. And it said how grateful and appreciative Tolstoy was for these books. So in his estate numbered some 22,000 books, including several of Eddy's works. And then William McCracken, who later served as president of the First Church of Christ Scientists, wrote to New York World, as a newspaper in 1901, stating that he had received a communication signed by Tolstoy's daughter, that her father never felt anything but respect for Christian Science. So I just thought that was so interesting. Lawrence, did you want to say any more about this?
No, not really. I mean, that's it. Yeah. I'm just so amazed that they died, I think, 2 weeks apart or something. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Their lifespan was very similar. He died in 1912. And someone reminded me this, I guess it was Wednesday, or it was July 16th. 1821 was Mrs. Eddy's birthday, but the Tolstoy was 1828, so they did live, they were contemporaries, and gained comfort and knowledge from each other. So, and then along with that, this week, newspapers, there was an article, Leo Tolstoy, short story, How Much Land Does a Man Need? And it's a very or you can Google it, but just a little more. You know, it talks about a man Paham lives with his family in a village where they work hard for land for their living. Though they have little, he is thankful. But he still wishes a little more land. And he keeps getting more and more land. And it says that the devil is smiling at him. But he's never satisfied. He keeps getting more and more. And then in this tale, Tolstoy exposes unquenchable desire when enough is never enough. He proves, as Marcus Aurelius says in Meditation, take full account of what excellencies you possess, and in gratitude, remember how you would hanker after them if you had none, if you had not them. What you have right now, though it might be less, is enough. And then, when you ever desire, or when you ever begin to desire more than you have, remember that just a little more often proves endless. Pursue gratitude, for it supplies the heart with happiness in the little thing. Anyway, the good short story, how much land does a man need? And I like that idea of pursuing gratitude. We pursue so many things that we think we need and want, but pursue gratitude, to pursue the qualities of God, that is truly what is fulfilling. And in this week's lesson, we have the beautiful synonym of life. So, Nancy, would you like to read to us what you found on the golden text?
Yes. I looked up the word, a couple of words in Webster's. I looked up light, which is understanding and wisdom, life, illumination of mind, instruction, and in scripture, it has God, the source of knowledge. I looked up salvation, the act of saving, preservation from destruction, danger, or great calamity, the redemption of man from bondage of sin, and the conferring on him everlasting happiness and victory. And I looked up strength, firmness, power of vigor, power of resisting attacks, fastness, power of mind, soundness, fortification, and fortress. And then Benson's commentary. The Lord is my light, my counselor in my difficulties, and my comforter and deliverer in all my distresses. David's subject called him the light of Israel, but he owns that he shone as the moon doth, with a borrowed light, the light which God communicated to him, reflected upon them. God is our light, as he shows us the state we are in by nature and practice, and that into which we may and must be brought by grace in order to our salvation. As our light, he shows us the way in which we must walk, and gives us comfort in walking therein, shows us the hindrances that are in our way, the difficulties and enemies and oppositions we have to encounter, and how we may be enabled to overcome them. It is only in his light that we now proceed on in our Christian course, and it is in his light that we hope to see light forever. And my salvation, in whom I am saved, and by whom I am and shall be saved. The Lord is the strength of my life, the protector of my exposed life, who keeps me from being slain, and the supporter of my weak and frail life, by whom I am upheld and preserved in being. God, who is a believer's life, is the strength of his life, not only the person by whom, but in whom he lives.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Full and complete love of our Father, Mother, God. So, nothing ever to fear. He is your life in every way. Of whom shall you fear? And then the beautiful responsive reading. And I've mentioned this many, many times, but I love it so much. One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. So again, if you ever, I'm not sure what you should do.
Or what you should seek.
Yes, or what you should seek in life. I mean, just this is what's a beautiful thing to think about and to be and to do. That word, dwell, are the definitions. To keep one's attention fixed, make one's abode, spend one's time, live in, or near. To dwell signifies to abide in, to inhabit, to have a fixed residence in a place. And are we doing that? In an article by Violet Kirschner that Harry sent, she writes, "This one thing whereby one may dwell in the consciousness of divine love is the only thing that heals, redeems, and satisfies. Hence, every day and all day, the Christian scientist inquires of divine love what is the truth about any situation. He seeks to destroy everything unbeautiful in his thinking by reflecting the beauty of God good. Divine mind it is which guides, guards, and rewards the true inquirer and inquirer." So when we're living in God and thinking about him, we are in his house. We are dwelling with him. And yes, we'll be aware of things that need handling and to be healed, but we are
equipped to do it.
We will. We'll be equipped to do it, and there'll be such peace and serenity and joy and beauty and every good thing. So, and if there's in a time of trouble, he will set me up upon a rock. Teach me thy way, O Lord. Lead me in a plain path. This whole beautiful 27th Psalm is something to really work with and think about. And then ending again with the 23rd Psalm. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Surely, no question about it. So beautiful. Now, beautiful story we have. The story of Caleb and Joshua. Now Moses is, he says, go search out the land of Canaan. And some do search it out, and they come back with what kind of a report?
Well, some of them were negative.
Yeah, the evil report.
Yeah, evil. But not Caleb and Joshua. They were positive and said, the Lord, you know, we'll listen to the Lord, and he will guide us. And it was a beautiful place.
Yeah, 10 out of the 12 were fearful. Weren't they?
Very.
They didn't see what God had for them. They were looking at the whole thing with temporal, mortal vision.
Yeah, and they said we were as grasshoppers. Really?
What kind of a self-image is that?
And I with the dot on top.
What did you say, Lawrence?
No, I said an I with the dot on top. A small I.
Yes, exactly. Well, but Caleb and Joshua, they went out and they knew that the Lord was with them, and they weren't to fear. And that these people didn't know that, so their defense had departed from them. And it said there was a spirit, but my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and it followed me fully, Him I will bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. And the others, a plague was cast on them. Now, when I read this, I couldn't help but think about the pandemic. I mean, these stories are relevant for today. We hear this awful report, right? Terrible report. Everything was awful. I'm talking about what happened. Those that believe that negative report shook in their boots, right? And many of them died of the plague.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just being factual here. Okay, and then there were those who stood their ground with the truth or refused to go down with those false reports, and they believed in their Lord. We have a beautiful Love is the Liberator on that, on contagion, and beautiful articles on that, and just standing fast with God. And they lived. And so it goes on today. You can hear all kinds of reports that go on. Which report are you going to believe in? What report? Are you going to have the Spirit of God within you? Are you going to stand fast? And, you know, it goes to...
Or the spirit of fear and negativity.
No,
it's the disloyalty to God that is what we should be afraid of. not the problem, but the being disloyal to God is what's going to do us.
It's a disobedience to the first commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And many people, you know, get there ignorantly because they don't know. They don't know who and what God is, and they don't know who they are. So they ignorantly just believe the propaganda and the false beliefs and suffer the consequences.
And this goes, I feel, as a watching point where it says, this is God's universe, even though it appears to be distorted into matter. So they have this distorted view, and Caleb and Joshua saw God's view.
Thank you. And in the lesson, and this is so important in Science and Health, citation 14, we apprehend life in divine science only as we live above corporeal sense and correct it. Live above it and correct it. Our proportionate admission of the claims of good or of evil determines the harmony of our existence, our longevity, and our Christianity. There we are.
Mm-hmm.
Proportionate admissions of the claims of good or of evil determines how harmonious your life will be, how harmonious your existence will be, what kind of health you're going to have, your longevity, and how much of Christianity you truly comprehend. So remember this and don't believe the false reports. It wants you to shake in your boots. Just like we've talked about the other stories, Daniel and the lion, then David defeating Goliath. Who's telling you these things? This uncircumcised Philistine, how dare you, Lord God Almighty. And that's why, yes, we need to know what's going on in the news, but we're selective about what we read and we don't fill our thoughts and minds up. I refuse to listen to anything. I called it the nameless nothing. I wasn't going to listen to that stuff, because I knew it was out to mesmerize me, as is many other things.
You need to know just enough to be able to correct it, as Mrs. said.
Yes.
And God will guide you when you need to go looking. You don't just need to look all the time, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. No, because you need to spend most of your time correcting what is out there.
Yeah, and then, you know, it goes on to say that he goes, Caleb goes and gets the land that was promised to him. He said, and now behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. He is 85. And yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war both to go out and to come in. And he was given his reward. And Mrs. Eddy says there'll be sure rewards to righteousness. Now, he waited a long time for it, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My father would say, quit your belly aching if you haven't gotten your reward. Keep going. And then the lesson, you know, so full of constant toil, deprivations, exposures, and all untoward circumstances that, if without sin, can be experienced without suffering. Whatever it is your duty to do, you can do without harm to yourself. Muscles are not self-acting. Mind does not move. They are motionless. Hence the great fact that mind alone enlarges and empowers man through its mandate by reason of its demand for and supply of power, not because of muscular exercise, but by reason of the blacksmith's faith in exercise, his arm becomes stronger. We spend a lot of time pursuing things when we would be better pursuing the science life. Christian Science. All the answers are there. And no faculty of mind is lost. All being is eternal, spiritual, perfect, harmonious in every action. Can't lose your memory. Delusion says you do. You better make sure you stop listening to that. And then in this article, Thy Will Be Done, that Carrie sent, says the obedience of Moses to the will and purpose of God enabled him, after he was 80 years of age, to take up and carry forward for 40 years a work that would have worn out a score of unfaithful leaders. And at the age of 120, his eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. Joshua, the companion and successor of Moses, and one of the two faithful spies, lived through 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, led the people through Jordan, conquered much of the land, and lived until he was 110. And before he departed, he reminded the children of Israel that God had been faithful to all his promises. Caleb, the other faithful spy, on his 85th birthday, was found asking for and receiving his share of the inheritance of Israel, and bearing testimony to this fact, I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now. So, God uses all of us. As long as we're willing. I was reading some other article. This wasn't a Christian Science article, but it said, you know, God saves the most important work for those who are more advanced in age. And then he gave all the list all the things people have done at an age that most people think, oh, I'm going to retire, spend my days playing golf. Not good. I've seen people do that, and not good.
They concentrate on the number.
Yes.
Not on the name.
Yes. So, so much good that we have to do. Also, this these are articles from, I think, newspapers that Carrie sent about this Caleb and Joshua. Now, I guess there are three articles and two sentinels. But anyway, one of them says, the obstacle that makes the faint heart sink may be only a trial of faith. The majority report of the spies that made Israel turn back from entering the promised land was not a divine direction. Caleb and Joshua had the mind of the Lord, and it was the duty of Israel, in spite of the giants, to go up and possess the land. Where there seems to be a divine thwarting, we are to take counsel of our courage and not of our fears. The promised land of holiness is before every one of us. The Christian generations which have preceded us have all been spies for us, bringing tidings of the hardness of the way, but all uniting on the goodness of the land and the blessedness of its conditions. Now, as in days of old, there are the Calebs and Joshuas on one hand, and the faint hearts on the other. But now as then, God is with those who are bound to overcome and who will conquer in his sign. It is the tendency of fear to magnify dangers and obstacles. The 10 spies saw everything in an exaggerated form. Every man was a mighty giant, every city strongly fortified. But they forgot the omnipotent would have gone with them to battle. And we may be sure that if we go forward in the path God marks out for us, in confidence reliance upon him, he will give us strength and wisdom for every need. And the Bible mirrors human experience, therefore it never grows obsolete. Every generation sees its journeys pictured in the approach of the Israelites to the promised land and their defeats on its border. But Moses and Caleb and Joshua still rose up as leaders, and the spirit, which makes them strong and patient and triumphant, is the spirit which the Bible tells us is of God. So that is why to maintain well in the house of the Lord and keep that spirit of God within you, so nothing is impossible to God. Nothing. And in the that article age that I just referred to a little while ago, Mrs. Eddy says, hold yourself open to the plans of God and close to the plots of Satan. Rise in the spiritual forces of your own destiny. So, again, when you've got God's destiny in your heart, when you're working for him and not thinking about yourself, you have these spiritual forces. Rise in the spiritual forces of your own destiny. All the power of God is behind you to will and to do his good work. What can stay his hand? What can?
And don't we have present day examples of this as well as biblical examples? Mrs. Eddy refers to Florence Nightingale. Heard of Mrs. Eddy herself. And there are others who lead selfless lives, accomplish a great deal, and go on forever almost.
And this, another thing that Carrie found about Florence Nightingale, she said, if I could give you information of my life, it would be to show how a woman of a very ordinary ability has been led by God in strange and unaccustomed paths to do in his service what he has done in her. And if I could tell you all, you would see how God has done all and I nothing. I have worked hard, very hard, that is all. And I have never refused God anything. That's how she did it.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful, yes. And so, yeah, all of these people who did great things, and there are so many of them throughout the ages, they were all motivated by God, every single one. I don't know the one that was. If you look into them, if you look into their biography or anything, you'll see it was God. They knew there was a power greater than themselves, and that's how it is done, and that's how we must go forward And we will be hearing, and we're hearing them every day, all kinds of reports, negative reports. Don't believe the negative reports. What does God say about this situation? What is God saying? What is the truth? How can I bring healing and peace and joy to whatever situation is going on, rather than getting dragged down with all the fear and negativity? Now then, those pages, mine are well worn in my book, 244 to 248, and it's full of it in the last week. And I love to think about all the words that Mrs. Eddy uses, that man is governed by immortal mind, is always beautiful and grand. Each succeeding year unfolds wisdom, beauty, and holiness. Is that what's happening with you? And remember in that article Karen brought out, Dorothy Rickey about immortality. Says that every morning, wake up with the fact that you are an immortal being. Say it many times throughout the day. Before you sleep at night, know your immortality. Know that you're not just somebody showing up at some job, but that you are an immortal being, being guided and guarded and loved and taken care of by God Almighty. And then let us shape our views of existence into loveliness, freshness, and continuity, rather than to age and blight. That word freshness, newness of strength, spirit, vigor, liveliness, contrary to a faded state, the color of youth and health. And I read somewhere where someone said, to ask God to enhance your beauty with the beauty of holiness. Now we can all, especially females, fuss around about your looks. But what is more beautiful than the beauty of holiness? You know, the singer, many of you commented on the beautiful singer we had last week.
Yes.
His eyes on the sparrow. And she was a gospel singer, but boy, I know it was beautiful on your computer, but in the auditorium, it came out of the depths of her being. It was somewhat what I was trying to say last week about the experience of the black people, how they've been the fire of affliction. What's come out is something beautiful. And her beauty was, yes, the beauty of holiness. Afterwards in the foyer, everything about her, just beautiful. Her mother is a pastor in a church in Newark. She said she was going to come back and bring her mother. She does. And also, along with this, on our noteworthy news, we have heard, and it's a David Barton who spoke lot. He has a series called American Heritage, but three of his episodes was all on the incredible contributions of the African Americans during the Revolutionary War. Things I have never heard of, and things you all should know. It goes on throughout history, but he was just bringing out the Revolutionary War. There was this one man, Richard Allen, I believe his name was. He became a Christian. He converted the plantation owner where he worked. So, of course, the plantation owner said, gee, I can't have slaves. I'm a Christian. So he let all his slaves free. And then Richard Allen went north. He became a preacher. He preached to thousands of people, most of them white, by the way. And then during the plague in D.C., I guess it was yellow fever, one of those. He and another black doctor and Benjamin Rush, who was also a well-known doctor at that time, while everybody was fleeing Washington, D.C., they stayed and they took care of all the sick people. And they weren't afraid, by the way, because if they were, they would have gotten sick themselves. But their Christianity, it's just so inspiring. And then another one, he says it was the black man, he was responsible for the winning at Bunker Hill. I mean, these were stories I never heard, but they should be heard. Absolutely. Again, the point, the beauty of holiness, it's not based on a physical outside appearance. In fact, all these people doing all these things to themselves, usually it makes you look worse. So remember this. Time is running. So remember. What did you say?
Ding, ding.
Right. So we will end today with a beautiful article, again, sent by Terry, by Ella Hogue from a Christian Science journal called God's Circling Arm. Just a few excerpts.
Ella Hope, she writes, Moses comforted the children of Israel in words that have been rich in blessing to God's people through all the centuries. When he declared, quote, "The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he shall thrust out the enemy before thee, and shall say, destroy them," end quote. In similar manner, Mrs. Eddy, the beloved leader of Christian Science, brings God near to his people of today when she writes, and this is in poems, quote, "Love is our refuge. Only with mine eye can I behold the snare, the pit, the fall. His habitation high is here and nigh. His arm encircles me and mine and all." The scriptures contain many references to the arm of the Lord. Therein, his arm is accounted mighty, holy, victorious, strong, glorious, tender, protective. This metaphor of God's arm has always been very precious to his people, since there is nothing men need more than the understanding of God's protecting, all-loving, almighty control. In Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, page 24, Mrs. Eddy writes, "He to whom the arm of the Lord is revealed will believe our report and rise into newness of life with regeneration. This is having part in the atonement. This is the understanding in which Jesus suffered and triumphed." And in Miscellaneous Writings, page 183, she asks the question, "Who hath believed our report? Who understands these sayings?" And then she answers by declaring, "He to whom the arm of the Lord is revealed, to whom divine science unfolds omnipotence, that equips man with divine power, while it shames human pride," end quote.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
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 Thank you.